The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is April 15th, a Wednesday, 2015. Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 139, a production of Galactic Netcasts. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me, as always, for the past 50 years, Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. How you guys doing?
2 weeks ago, it was 30 years.
Yeah.
Time flies.
Time flies.
Don't you know that we're actually, you and I and Anessa, we're all in a gigantic time machine?
What?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Wow.
See, we've gone through all these years, but we don't age. It's amazing.
Wait, Dave, say that again. What's the big reveal?
We've gone through all these years, yet we don't age.
Because we are?
We're time travelers. No, we're aliens. Damn it. I didn't know you were setting me up. I'm sorry. Let me do it again. Let me redeem myself.
Okay.
The reason this has all happened is because we're in a gigantic time machine and we haven't aged. Time traveling aliens.
There we go.
In space. Throwback. Welcome to the podcast where we talk about aliens and everywhere they may be, matey. Film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and in real life. You know, I've been doing like broadcasting and podcasting for like over 25 years, and yet I still have what they call crutches. Like I do a lot.
You know, doing the adventure party and editing the audio, when I go through the audio, I want to punch myself in the face for all the ums and that I do, and it's just terrible. And when I go into it, I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pay attention to it. And then there's just it's terrible.
Fix it in real life, man. Get a hold of yourself.
That's what I'm trying to do, but it's like I try to be conscious of it, and then I get to the editing part, and it's just all over the place. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's rough. We all have those. Although,
yep.
What's yours, Anessa? Do you have one? Do you have a crutch? A verbal crutch?
I think it would just be the usual uhs and ums, wouldn't it?
Okay. So
I don't even pay that much attention. I mean, I remember taking a speech class 10 or so years ago, and you would have to get up in front of everybody and talk, and the professor would sit there and mark down all of your nervous tics and whatnot while you're giving your speech or your spiel. And I think for the most part, everyone was fairly consistent with the uhs and ums. You'd have people that would maybe use their hands more or pace or other things. But I think the uhs and ums and whatnot are just kind of a universal thing for a lot of people.
I find that when I use my hands, I do less of the ums and ahs.
Yeah.
Because it helps me explain things. And that way it takes out those filler words. And, I say so a lot, too. Damn it. That's another one.
Yeah.
Okay.
We had a girl that would say per se all the time.
Oh, wow.
When she would give presentations. And then I was taking a government class, I think, at the same time. And I had her for that class. And she was giving a presentation and she just said per se. Every other sentence was per se, per se, per se.
That would not
I've never heard anyone use per se as much in a 5-minute thing as that one person.
That wouldn't get annoying at all.
No, not at all. It was wonderful. What are you talking about?
All right, let's dive into things here.
In the news.
So our first of three sections, we have the news, the craft corner, and our picks for the week. And I believe Brad has the first story this week.
I am first. NASA chief scientist Ellen Stofan predicts we'll find signs of alien life within 10 years. NASA's top scientist predicts that we'll find signs of alien life by 2025, with even stronger evidence for extraterrestrials in the years that follow. She's quoted as saying, "I think we're going to have strong indications of life beyond Earth within a decade, and I think we're going to have definitive evidence within 20 to 30 years." And this was at a panel that was done this past Tuesday when they were talking about water in the universe. "We know where to look. We know how to look." Oh, I'm sorry, I lost my place. "We know how to look," Stofan added. "In most cases, we have the technology and we're on a path to implementing it. And so I think we're definitely on the road." Others on the panel agreed as well. "It's definitely not an if, it's a when," said Jeffrey Newmark, NASA's interim director of heliophysics. "When we do find evidence of life, however, it's likely it won't be signs of an alien civilization, but rather something much, much smaller. We are not talking about little green men," Stofan said. "We are talking about little microbes." The claim echoes one made by, The claim echoes one made at a similar event last year when NASA astronomer Kevin Hand also predicted a big discovery. "I think in the next 20 years, we will find out we are not alone in the universe." And this is from the Huffington Post.
And they're talking like near-Earth stuff, like the Jupiter moons or the Saturn moons or even on Mars, because this week they talked about the rover Curiosity, right?
Yes, it discovered brine and there's subsurface water.
So there could be.
I think it's more on the equator. Is that what I read? It's more along the equator.
I didn't read the actual article, so I'm not sure myself.
Okay, but that's water's a key ingredient, and if your planet can get warm enough to have liquid water on it, that can sustain the life form, then that's one of the major requirements.
So, okay, I have a question for both of you. Where do you think we'll find it first? I know we've talked about the algae that supposedly grew on, what, the windows of the International Space Station?
Yes.
Algae or some kind of lower form of life. Now, where's the next step where we'll find life, do you think?
I would guess maybe, I'm trying to think of which ones.
My money's on Europa.
Yeah, I'm thinking Europa too.
I was trying to remember, there's also another one. Was it Ganymede?
Yeah, that's it. I was trying to think of the same thing too.
Yeah, I was like, I think it's Ganymede. Yeah, that would be my guess. It would be one of the satellites, one of the moons in the solar system.
Because we're finding a lot more water than we thought there was in the solar system. So where there's water, there's life.
At least the conditions exist if that is a requirement for life. So it definitely raises the odds.
Oh, you're talking the different possibility for life existing in other conditions, right?
Well, I don't want to say that water's the smoking gun, because there is, you know, salty water on Mars. We haven't discovered any microbial life yet. So that's where I'm kind of going with that. You know, Europa underneath all the ice has got liquid water. So, you know, once we can penetrate that ice and actually start looking under that, we might, you know, there's liquid water under there. We know that for a fact. So,
by the way, you said penetrate.
I did say penetrate.
You know, it's funny. A simple word like penetrate can have some really dirty connotations.
Brad posted an image the other day about WD-40 from, was it the 50s or the 60s?
Yeah, it was an ad from when WD-40 was released in 1964.
Okay. And it's hilarious.
Because the words at that time, you know, protect your, or lubricate your tool and, you know, loosen your rusty nuts and stuff like that. And things at that time didn't have the connotations that they do now. I mean, the English language is constantly evolving and changing, and the meanings of words. A, change over time. And that ad now would be something that if you put on a billboard or something like that would be considered provocative.
And humans.
Yeah, because the ad, it starts off with, do you have tight nuts or a rusty tool? Then use WD-40 and the man-size pressure pack. Stands 9 inches high, 1.5 inch diameter, complete with red knob.
It doesn't even sound real. It sounds like a parody ad, you know, that's trying
really
to be
does.
Real.
It does.
Yeah, it says, and then, you know, it's got bullet points that say, makes old tools like new again, tool slide in and out with ease, lubricates dry passageways.
I'm going to have to relable this podcast because of you guys.
Makes screwing a pleasure.
Okay, look, I'm going to do the disclaimer. Again, we are talking about tools that you use.
And WD-40.
Yes.
But yeah, it says, makes screwing a pleasure. And gives better penetration. Oh, buy some, try some. Keep a spare pack in your car for emergency. Bam. WD-40.
So anyways, aliens. Are they out there? When will we find them? Where's the next place outside of our solar system?
And when will these aliens develop WD-40 so they have penetration technology?
And are these aliens sarcastic?
I hope so.
That would be fun.
Although they may end up being like Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy that doesn't necessarily understand the concept of sarcasm because they don't have it in their culture.
You know, before I realized you were talking about Drax, I was thinking you were talking about the guy, the alien from Doctor Who, who's the soldier but became
Strax.
A nurse. Yeah, Strax.
Oh, Strax.
Yeah. And then I was going to jump in. Oh, Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Did I say Strax? I thought I said Drax.
No, you said Drax.
Okay.
All right. So
I could have said Strax. And so, yeah. But anyway.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Brad. Let's move on to Anessa's story.
Woohoo! Mysterious Siberian crater may have a spaceship in it.
Dun, dun, dun. Ba-ba-ba.
Those mysterious holes that have been forming in Siberia just got another mystery. The Siberian Times reports that a team of researchers from the Russian Academy of Sciences was investigating one of the large craters recently and reported finding an, quote, unidentified object resembling a space capsule at the bottom. Shortly thereafter, the team's satellite telephone link disconnected and they have not been heard from since.
Oh,
sounds like a movie. A helicopter crew that was also in the area reported having mechanical difficulties and was rescued, but there was no signs of the three-man crater team. Were the stories about the craters being caused by methane gas released by climate change a cover-up for something bigger? The mysterious crafts have been appearing primarily on the Yamal Peninsula, although a number have opened east of it. Until now, speculations on what's causing them bounce between explosions due to methane gas, heating as the permafrost thaws from unusually high temperatures, and pingos, which are mounds of earth and ice that collapse into craters as the ice melts. Details on the expedition are scarce. The Siberian Times say the team was at the crater taking measurements. They reported finding a gray-colored object made of metal, quote, unknown to earth, at a depth of 48 meters and a hostile environment. No other details of why the environment was hostile were given. The photograph shows snow and wind when the team took off, but that's nothing hostile to Siberians. What happened to the three men after their phone cut out? This is the statement from the emergencies ministry. At the moment, their call ended, and we cannot reach them again. When we sent a backup helicopter to the site, there was no sign of the three-man team. They have vanished. The crater was empty. Searching will continue through 1st of April. Which I guess that's already ended. Rescuers do not exclude the men have been kidnapped. Is this related to the mysterious flash seen before the four new holes were found in February? Did the team find an alien spacecraft and disappear because of it? Who or what would have kidnapped them? Comments on the website point out that the date of the article was April 1st, but that's probably a coincidence since there are no other prank stories and the Siberian Times have been serious about its coverage of the Siberian craters to this point. So,
well, yeah, they're serious because there's holes coming out of nowhere in their land. Their land is becoming
massive
holy.
Holes. Yeah.
They've got holy land.
But not righteous.
I like the part where it's metal unknown to man. Like, how do they know that?
I was going to say, like, how did they have time to analyze the metal? Although, I will say that there is a device that you can hold up to, like, metals or rocks. I know people typically use them for rocks whenever they're going out and doing surveys, but it'll spectral analyze the minerals in the rock and tell you what type of rock it is. But those are pretty pricey. I think they're like $20,000 or $30,000 for just the one thing.
Yeah,
so,
I don't think they'd bring equipment like that on an expedition of this.
You never know. But maybe it just wasn't in the database. So they're like, oh, not known to man.
Okay.
Like, maybe they didn't get the update. the latest firmware update that includes that particular metal.
Yeah.
And they just assume it was not of this world.
It was updated in transit between the time they left and the time they arrived at the crater.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they missed out on the update.
Were these guys giving, speaking of updates, were they giving updates as they went? So how do we know all this went down? Were they reporting in?
Well, I guess they probably knew whenever they called. They're like, hey, so this is what we've done so far. And then click.
Nothing.
And that's all they know, because then they sent out a second crew to look for them and they couldn't find them. So I'm assuming they found out what was going on from the initial phone call before it got disconnected.
This is going to be perfect segue, or not perfect segue, perfect sequel to a movie I recently watched on Netflix about an expedition in Russia, the Ural Mountains in Russia. Have you guys ever heard of
the Ural Pass?
Yeah. Yep. The movie's called Devil's Pass. And it's basically these younger kids, like in their early 20s, making a documentary about what happened. When was it, in the 50s, Brad, that original incident happened?
Mid-50s.
Yeah, where the expedition disappeared, or they clawed out of their tents, and a bunch of them were killed in various mysterious ways. So I'm thinking that this would be a perfect like sequel to that movie based on this story.
Indeed.
Yeah, if this story's true, which I really doubt it. I doubt the validity of the story.
Yeah, well, as the article points out from themysteriousuniverse.org, it did come out on April 1st.
Okay. So. That's a great website, by the way. You guys should check it out. I get a lot of stuff on our website, from their website. We do this thing pretty daily. It's called the Galactic Newsfeed, where it's basically a blog post of stories that kind of what we cover here on the Galactic Netcast Network. So you should check that out as well at galacticnetcasts.com. Moving on to the final story in the news section. And I always like to bring a little sci-fi or pop culture to the alien invasion. And I think I succeeded this time. The channel that brought us The Misfits is developing a new alien show. Misfits may be over. We're all familiar with Misfits, right?
Yes.
Do you want to explain it, Brad or Anessa, the plot of Misfits or the what it's about?
I'm actually not that familiar with Misfits, the TV show. I'm more familiar with the band. Just saying.
Anyways, on the Misfits TV show, a bunch of juvenile delinquent teenagers end up being exposed to something during a sort of a cosmic event, and they all get powers. Like, there's one person that can make themselves invisible, and depending on which season you're watching, there's a variety of abilities that each one of those kids had, and they had to kind of make the choice of, you know, are we going to use the powers for good? What are we going to do with them? So,
kind of like the Terrigen Mist from the Marvel Universe, or what happened on The Flash with all the metahumans kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay. So, anyways, the channel is E4. They brought us the superpowered juvenile delinquents, like Brad just said. So their new show is called Aliens, a 6-part comedy. So it's a comedy from Clerkenwell Films, the production company behind Misfits. Here's the synopsis. The aliens are here. In fact, They've been here for the last 40 years, but though they walk like us, talk like us, look like us, they're not allowed to live with us. All aliens are forced to live behind huge wall in a segregated community called Troy. It doesn't sound too funny so far. A ramshackle and hedonistic ghetto where a criminal subculture thrives. It's a world of mystery, danger, and forbidden pleasures. But when mild-mannered human Lewis, a border control guard at the wall's checkpoint, discovers that he is half alien, his secret threatens to turn his world upside down as he is drawn into the dark underbelly of Troy. Aliens will begin filming later this year. No air date as of yet. Doesn't, all right. From the description, doesn't really sound too funny at all, really.
No.
So, but maybe in the script, it's more of a lighthearted thing. To me, it kind of makes me think of maybe District 9 with their area for the aliens.
Yeah. Or it's going to be, you know what it's going to be? It's going to be like a fish out of water thing where he's going to be, he grew up human. And once his secret is discovered, he has to live with these aliens and shenanigans ensue. Like all the.
Or maybe he's not quite discovered, but he's curious about aliens. And so he goes over to try to find out what's going on, how they live, their culture and whatnot. Maybe. I don't know.
That could be as well. All very good theories so far. Brad, what do you think?
It sounds like an interesting concept. I would like to see the first episode for sure.
I imagine something like Last Man on Earth, kind of a very dark comedy, filmed like a drama, but with funny moments. No laugh track, of course, but just like a very funny dramedy, as they call them.
Sure, yeah.
That would be interesting. Would you be interested in watching this, either of you?
I'd like to learn a little more about it.
What if?
Yeah, I would check out the pilot episode.
What if I were to show you a trailer for it?
What?
I don't have a trailer. I just thought I would mess with you.
Oh, boo.
Lies.
All right. So again, they still start filming that later this year and no air date yet. No premiere date. So our news stories tonight. The channel that brought us The Misfits has a new show called Aliens, not a very original title. Maybe it's a working title so far.
What channel brought us The Misfits?
Channel 4. No, E4. I think that's Channel 4, or what used to be Channel 4, pretty sure. I don't know the British channels. I know there's a channel called Dave. I remember that because it's my name. And there's the BBC, of course. Isn't there Sky News, too, or Sky... That's a network over in Britain too.
Boy, if only we knew somebody from the UK.
Daryl, like are you listening? Please help us.
Or you know the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that takes time. And this way, the people that listen to us can actually call us or contact us and fill us in.
And we have a couple.
So there's BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5, S4C. And then, yeah, there's Sky, UK TV, Viacom, which I didn't know was a thing over there. Then you've got, like, a lot of the American networks, like Discovery and Disney and A&E.
I wonder if they have their own versions of those, like they do here in Canada. Like, there's a Canadian... The Discovery Channel here is different from the Discovery Channel in the U.S.
Oh, I'm sure it's different.
Yeah.
Different culture altogether. I mean...
Yeah. Brad was setting me up to talk about feedback, but thank you very much, Anessa. Appreciate the info. You can give us feedback if you want to weigh in on the whole, any of the what we talked about tonight. It could be the British channels. It could be where you think we'll be finding alien life first. Do you think this episode should have a R rating? Let us know. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com. That's the email address. You can also call us via the voicemail, 805-328-3966. And we've got one awesome new option, GalacticNetcasts.com. On the website, on the very right-hand side, there's a little tab. It says something like, send us a voice message or something like that. You record it on the website. It's mobile friendly too, so you don't have to go on like a computer browser. You can just go on your web browser on your phone or your tablet and record us a message and send us feedback through the website galacticnetcasts.com. Okay, let's move on.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a zone. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
Okay, we got on the last episode... The whole controversy of what is she saying? Is it cylinder, cylindrical? And we mentioned Daryl a few minutes ago. Daryl piped in on Twitter, and he hears cilantro.
Yum! I love cilantro.
That's awesome.
He says, another reason to call it coriander. What's coriander?
Coriander's the seeds, isn't it? Before it grows into cilantro. So it's just a different stage of the plant.
The woman clearly suggests the craft looks like coriander, coriander leaf. Oh, I see what he's saying. So he thinks that she's saying the craft that she saw looks like a coriander leaf. I don't know. I really don't know.
You know, anything's possible.
And I mean, they're all just different types of parsley. But I always thought coriander was more of the seeds.
I don't know anything about what we're talking about.
I don't know. I just know cilantro, and I know cilantro is like a parsley.
See, I learned something. I didn't know that.
Parsley family.
I had no idea. Okay, so...
It's, Chinese parsley.
Okay. So that intro, that's for the Craft Corner, and that's a look. Every episode, we take a look at a famous alien spacecraft, either... In real life, the ones that people claim to see up in the sky or on the ground or, you know, a close encounter, or ones from fiction. And I believe Anessa brought us a fictional craft this time for the Craft Corner. So what do you got?
I have the NTE-3120 NSEA Protector from Galaxy Quest. Bum, bum, bum.
Yay!
The NSEA Protector is an evolution-heavy cruiser that serves as a flagship for the NSEA, the National Space Exploration Administration. It is commanded by Peter Quincy Taggart and is Earth's most powerful interstellar spacecraft. Which, of course, initially it all kind of starts out as just, you know, a TV show in the movie, like Star Trek. the ship has a large crew, approximately 600 people. The highest-ranking officers and people of important position seem to have formed a bond with one another. The ship is the only known NSEA vessel with a Maktar crew member.
Maktar!
Maktar!
Who plays that guy again? That's tip of my tongue. He's got a very distinctive voice. He's British. No, he's not. I'm thinking of one of the cast members. Never mind.
No, you're thinking of the guy who plays
Severus Snape.
Yeah. That's not him.
Alan.
Turing.
No, it's not Turing.
Alan! Hang on.
Alan Rickman.
Alan! Yes, there
Alan,
we go.
Alan!
Aww. Oh, gosh.
Okay.
That never gets old.
No, it doesn't. Yeah.
I couldn't remember. I'm like, Alan. Maybe if I say it enough, his last name will come to me. And Brad finally said it. It's Rickman.
Okay. No, but that's not the character. That's not the alien character, right? He's a human playing an alien.
He's a human playing an alien. And the ship, of course, is on a TV show like Star Trek. So... That's kind of the thing with the film. For people that are not familiar with Galaxy Quest, just think of it as Star Trek, and you've got these people who star as crew members on the NSEA Protector, and they go to cons and stuff, and people, this the broadcast goes out in space and these aliens are watching their broadcast and they think that it's real. And so they basically abduct the actors who play the crew on the spaceship to come and save them from these other really mean aliens. So
just imagine if some aliens picked up William Shatner, George Takei.
Yeah.
Who else? Nichelle Nichols, and said, hey, we need you. Our race is in peril. Come with us because you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're just hanging out like, we're not really space heroes. We're just actors. So, but yeah. And they don't necessarily realize that the actors that is on this show, they don't necessarily realize right away that the aliens are actual aliens and they're being serious and their request for help. So it's a fun movie if people haven't seen it. It's wonderful. But anyway, back to the ship. The ship is equipped with a state-of-the-art quantum flux drive. The protector is capable of sustained speeds in excess of Mach 15 and sprints up to Mach 20. It is known to make use of two methods of transportation for personnel to and from the ship, the surface pods and the digital conveyor. The ship is the only known vessel to be equipped with the mysterious Omega 13, a device capable of reversing time 13 seconds, a chance to redeem a single mistake.
God, I wish that movie was available on streaming somewhere. It's not, though.
It was on Amazon Prime there for a while. I don't think it is anymore. It might still be, but yeah, that was the only place that I knew of it.
Guess what?
What?
I own it.
I own it too. And I think I have a digital copy on my iPad.
Yay! Do you purposely wait for the moment to say that line in every episode of the Alien Invasion?
Almost.
I just need to pick a movie and so anyway. Offensive capabilities. The ship has a plethora of offensive weaponry. It has four resonance cannon batteries, as well as a full complement of Gannet magnets, pulse catapults, and quantum rockets. But its primary weapon is the blue particle cannons and has additional red. Defensive capabilities. The ship's primary defense seems to be its plasma armor. The real world, which to me seems like the real movie world, because I couldn't find anything about this dude that they're talking about on the internet. The iconic NSEA protector was designed by legendary Galaxy Quest art director Geoff Walters. It is extrapolated from advanced proposals for real NASA space technology. The protector has been turned into toys, model kits, and even a best-selling air freshener. I kind of want this air freshener. And then behind the scenes, designing the NSA protector was a huge challenge for Geoff Walters. Walters came up with nearly 100 different ideas for the ship, but none of them satisfied the artistic eye of the series creator, Frank Rose. Finally, during a friendly game of tennis, the frustrated Walters accidentally slammed his racket into the net post, shattering the upper part of the rim. A sheepish Walters held up the broken racket to his shock. Rose looked at it and said, "That's it. That's our ship." So,
that's an awesome story.
The protector came to be, but
all right.
Yep.
Is that all you got on it? You got more?
That's pretty much all I have on the ship. I mean, they had a big list of things that you could read that were about the mess hall and the living quarters and whatnot. It was just it was a long list and. It just seems like it would be pretty standard places that you would find on a ship.
Hey, you know, Vanessa, as long as you got the digital conveyor in there, then I'm happy.
Yep, it's in there. I put all the things that I thought was important. Looking at the ship, to me, it kind of reminds me of a Cylon Raider.
Are you guys stuck? I thought you were stuck for a second.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We're good.
Oh, yeah, Raider, because it's got the body of the ship, and it's like trying to think of a way to describe it. Reminds me of a submarine a little. And then you have the wings that branch off and then they curve towards the back, And it's that curvature of the, I guess, wings or whatever you'd want to call them, that curve towards the back, that make me think of the Cylon Raider and how they're curved and they've got like that little point in the middle, except it flies the other way around, not wings first like the Raiders do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's aesthetically, that's what it looks like to me. Brad or Dave might have a better description of what it looks like, because I'm not the best at describing things visually.
You know what? You did a great job. What was it? Was that the last episode? Where, no, it was two episodes ago.
Two episodes ago, and Brad wasn't here to describe something.
We were talking about the winged unidentified flying object, right? That was it?
Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah. And I was like, it looks like a squished VW.
I thought you did a hell of a job, Vanessa.
Oh, thank you.
I understood.
At least one person understood, and that makes me happy.
Yay!
All right, awesome. So that's your pick? Or am I not
that's
your
my
pick?
That's, or my craft for the week.
Craft corner. All right, let's move on to picks. Brad, I'm going to let you go first. I'm not going to let you finish. I'm going to let you go first.
Yo, I'm going to let you finish, but Kanye West is what it's getting at.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Just making sure.
I'm going to let you all finish, and then I'm going to go.
Okay, we're finished, I think. Vanessa, we're finished, right?
Maybe.
Okay.
But this podcast is the best podcast of all podcasts.
Okay, go ahead. So I noticed that there was really nothing on Netflix that really fit the bill for this particular episode. So I went to Hulu, and I found an independent sci-fi alien-based picture from 2008 called Interplanetary. And the concept is it takes place in the future. There is a Mars Base 2 is where this takes place. And they are looking to survey things to build a Mars Base 3. Now, what I want you to do is think about if you were to launch a crew of, say, 6 people into space and put them on a planet and have them kind of be sort of the first wave. And I know you're going to say, but Mars Base 2, Brad, that's part of the mystery. We'll get to that in a second. But would you launch a crew of 6 middle managers into space?
Middle managers, Brad? Tell us
the
more.
The majority of them are like middle management. So you have somebody that does PR, and you have somebody that is a doctor, but doesn't really do forensics. He just does basic, you know, if you've got a scratch or cut or, I mean, he understands medicine, but he not to that level. You've got a person that everybody thought he was the head of security, but actually he was sent ahead of security to get things, you know, put things into place and make sure policies were set and things like that for security.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And your person that is in charge of this particular group is a more of a PR administrator sort of position. And it's an indie film. It's shot in a lesser quality than like Interstellar. It's not that crisp. It really has a home movie kind of a feel to it. Like I said, it was shot in 2008, but it's an independent film. It's all in color. And
thank God it's in color.
It's in full color. And the mystery, like I mentioned before, it's assumed by the people that we're following in the film that they don't know of a Mars Base 1. It was destroyed is what they're told. Or I'm sorry. No, they're told that the base that they're on, Mars Base 2, is actually Mars Base 1, but it was thrown around in a focus group and they decided that Mars Base 2 was just a better name for it. So they just renamed it.
Wait a second. Is this a drama or a comedy?
Yes, it's a dramedy.
A dramedy. I thought
so. It's a sci-fi dramedy. And it takes sudden, abrupt turns from comedy to drama. It's very It's very odd, and the choices that some of the characters make, I wanted to grab my monitor and shout because it was just like, ah, you're a horrible middle manager, and that decision is just stupid, you know, because they find themselves in a life or death situation when they find out that they're not alone on Mars. There is another group that is on Mars, and they are trying to kill the people in Mars Base 2. And I don't want to give anything else away. But I haven't mentioned aliens yet. Part of the story is one of the technicians discovers a hand and forearm bone of what is assumed to be an alien being on Mars. And he actually puts together a hand camcorder sort of device, puts together a short, you know, film with him saying, hey, I'm so-and-so, and I have found this alien being, and he zooms in on it. And so there is there was or could still be alien life on Mars, and then ships it off to like a social network or another organization. So it is put out for the general populace of Mars. And that is unbeknownst to anybody else on the planet, a part of Mars Base 2. And when they do contact Earth with the question about what they're supposed to do because somebody's out there trying to kill them, what procedures, because HR didn't give them any guidelines on what to do. And so they're very confused. The head of the organization on Mars Base 2 is very confused. And she is promptly told that they're all fired, that she's inept, and she can't believe that, you know, this announcement that there was life on Mars was not screened in any way, shape, or form by the corporation that is running Mars Base 2, the Interplanetary Corporation, which is where the film gets its name. So,
sounds pretty good. Was it good? Did you enjoy it?
It's one of those things where if you do a tip of the hat to something, do it well. And it felt like at certain points they were trying to emulate 70s. The impression that I get of late 70s, early 80s sci-fi films that were low budget, and it sort of falls flat a little bit. And I think at certain points the middle management stuff is funny, but then it kind of goes too far where... Or maybe it's far enough and you just get frustrated at the fact that middle management's inability to take a step forward is costing the lives of people on Mars Base 2. And it gets a little frustrating. And maybe that was the point of what they were trying to do. But to me, you know, I'd give it 2.5 stars. But it just, I don't know, to me it didn't feel like they fully accomplished what they were trying to do.
Okay. Would you recommend it to others?
I would recommend watching it to get a good feel of 80s and, like I said before, 80s and late 70s based sci-fi that doesn't have the writing chops that are used today. It wasn't given the amount of serious treatment that it is now. And this film is definitely an homage to that sensibility of how they wrote and did sci-fi films back in the 70s and 80s. So
it sounds like what Aliens would be, the movie Aliens, if it were like a dark comedy. You know, the Weyland-Yutani Corporation kind of reminds me of the Interplanetary Corporation because they're kind of working behind the scenes. And at least that's the vibe from you giving me the description that you gave me.
Yes, because part of the mystery is there was a Mars Base 1, and it's discovered.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right, let's move on to my pick. It's Close Encounters, and not the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. This is a documentary series. As far as I know, it's only airing on Canadian TV. It's Canadian production, I'm sorry. I'm sure that you can find it online somewhere. And it's another one of these documentary series where they feature or they look at, they highlight supposed UFO encounters, real life UFO encounters. And they do two each episode. And each episode, I believe, is an hour long, I think. No, maybe a half hour. I forget. Anyways, I watched more of them. this last week, because this was supposed to be for last week's podcast that we didn't produce. So the two episodes that I watched was Willow Grove / Aliens in the Swamp. That's Season 2, Episode 3. And Fire in the Sky, that's Season 2, Episode 4. So the first one, the Wild Grove, refers to this incident that happened in Ohio, and I want to say early 1980s or late 1970s. Two officers spot a strange light, bright light flying in the night sky. Police dispatch advises them to pursue the object, triggering a massive car chase. Now, that may sound familiar to you. Does that ring a bell to you guys, that incident? A massive chase by police across, like, jurisdictions? Like, it went on, I think it actually crossed state lines.
Huh. It's not ringing any bells for me.
It sounds a little familiar, but I can't quite place from where.
Okay. Well, that's the first story they talk about on this episode that I watched. And it was really fascinating because there were some multiple witnesses from people that are supposed to be observant as part of their job. Like, police officers are trained to make observations and to know details of a situation. And they gave, like, super detailed things of what they saw. And it's hard to believe that police officers on a chase across jurisdiction and state lines would lie about something that... And it's hard to believe that it would be like, I think there was a point in this episode where they talked about, oh, it's Venus. And they're like, no, it's not Venus.
Swamp gas.
Yeah, it's not any of those. It's a definite thing that is moving around, that they're chasing, that it seems to be actually aware of them chasing it. So it goes even faster. And it seems like this UFO is like messing with the cops. It was really a fascinating story. Now, the second one of this first episode is Aliens in the Swamp, and the basic synopsis of that is an ex-military outdoorsman tries to make contact with a UFO in the Florida Everglades. Basically, he, as I recall, he and his dog are out there. He's, like, camping overnight. He hunts, so he's out in the Everglades, and his dog hears or smells or sees something, goes... chases after it. He chases after the dog after a while, and he actually discovers a UFO in the swamp, like right above him, and he gets knocked down, and he's actually unconscious for like a day. He wakes up in the swamp with no idea what happened. That's the second incident of this first episode I watched. The second episode I watched, Fire in the Sky, a wave of sightings in Corrales, Brazil, 1977, causes mass panic and thousands of people leave the island as a result. They left the island because of this mass panic. Basically, these orbs kept on showing up, like very, very small orbs that would like shoot things at them, like laser beams. And again, like a lot of people saw this, like a bunch of people. It wasn't just one person and an isolated incident. It was a bunch of people, and it kept on happening. And the U.S. government actually got involved and tried to cover it up. That's how, like, it was really interesting. Like, I didn't even know this happened. And then the second story was, on a dairy farm in Australia, a strange flying object causes severe headaches of the farmer and distress among his livestock, and that was kind of a boring one. So I'm really enjoying this series. It continues. I have it set on the DVR, and I look forward to it every Friday night. So, again, it's Close Encounters, and hopefully, if you're not in Canada, you can find it to watch it somewhere within your means. All right.
Maybe it'll pop up on YouTube. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know. I mean, it might be syndicated. It might be shown, because it's all like, it's incidents from around the world. It's not just, they haven't shown a single Canadian incident yet. It's like America or other places in the world. So I can see them totally syndicating this on other channels, like in the U.S. or other places in the world.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, I have a feeling that Inessa watched another crazy, weird, like even stupid sci-fi movie from the title that's on our document.
Yes. And I came across it on the Amazon.com. Well, through Amazon Prime, I guess.
Okay.
So, Phantom from from Space, I believe. I don't have the doc in front of
That's
me anymore.
What it says.
But yeah, Phantom from Space was released in 1953. And it's an alien being with the power of invisibility. And it lands in Santa Monica. It kills two people who attacked him due to the menacing appearance of his spacesuit. And the creature takes it off while being pursued by government authorities to avoid being detected, of course. Because initially, you've got these, I guess they're government agents, they're communications specialists, and they're looking for a reason why some of their communications are being interrupted. They're trying to find a source for this interruption. And they're driving around and they've got like these giant antennas on their cars, which is kind of goofy. And as they're driving around, this lady runs up to them for help. She's running from the beach and she's talking about this guy that comes out of the water. And he was walking towards them and her husband, I think it was, ends up like hitting the guy in this suit. And, of course, the guy in the suit fights back and kills the guy. And so that was the first casualty. And then the next guy also, I believe, attacked the alien and he died. I'm noticing a trend. And the witnesses that have seen this person in a suit all say that he didn't have a face. And the cops initially, when he talked to the lady, they were also on the beach with another guy, which is the roommate who is staying with them temporarily. And he was thinking that it was like this weird love triangle and the guy, like the roommate, killed the husband so he could be with the girl. And that wasn't the case. Spoiler alert. And so then he asks them to describe and he gets one of the police illustrator people, artists, to draw what they saw. The description, and you see this profile, or not really profile,
artist rendering,
portrait. It's the other word, portrait of this alien, and you see the top chunk of his suit, and you see this round helmet, and it has a window for the eyes, but it's arched, it's curved glass, and it's got, I think, three tubes that come from where the mouth goes down to the chest of the suit. And it's got a couple of little, I think, antennas, if I remember. Or
of course,
for some reason, it's got ears. I don't know what's up with that. And their communications guys are trying to help out the local officials because they can track the movement of this being because of the interruption of the signal. And so they're going after this alien, which they don't really know that it's an alien. And at some point, the alien decides to strip down out of the suit just so he can avoid being caught by officials. And the movie, of course, continues on and it's cheesy. I didn't think it was horrible, but I think IMDb only gave it 3.9 stars. I probably would have given it 5.
Really?
I was being generous, I guess.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, too, is because of that hillbilly movie from a few weeks back is like...
that tainted everything.
that tainted everything. So all the really crappy movies have actually benefited from that hillbilly movie.
It's like having a bad, a really bad grade in your school, in your class. The grading on a curve.
Yeah. That movie totally ruined the curve for crappy movies. So I didn't hate it. It was really cheesy. The effects, of course, were kind of cheesy as well.
I mean, even for that time period, they
they were really cheesy for that time period. But yeah, the big thing is they're trying to figure out where this phantom from space is going and where he's hiding and trying to figure out like why he's here, and
because once the suit comes off, he's naked and invisible.
He is, and he's wearing the suit for a reason.
Yes,
not just because he's invisible. Which the other thing that really bugs me about the movie is, wouldn't an invisible person have an invisible suit? Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe in their true form they're invisible, but they don't want to be invisible, so they wear the suits.
Maybe.
Well, I don't want to give away the end of the...
Yeah, I don't want to say anything else as to why they're invisible, but yeah, it... If you want to watch a cheesy horror movie and you've got some friends that you want to hang out with and make fun of it, totally watch it.
So, Mystery Science Theater, this bitch.
Yeah, MST3K, this movie.
Right up in this.
Word.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. So, Phantom from Space is Inessa's pick. We had Close Encounters, the documentary series, and Interplanetary. I was trying to do the whole Beastie Boys song.
Intergalactic, planetary, planetary, intergalactic.
Yes. We'll have the picks on the picks page at our website, galacticnetcasts.com. So if you're interested, you can possibly buy them. And in a way, in a roundabout way, support the Galactic Netcast Network. We get a small smidgen of a percentage for every sale that people go through our portal, our picks page on the website, galacticnetcasts.com. Okay, so that's going to do it for this episode of The Alien Invasion. For more, you can go to our website. Also, watch this episode later on YouTube, youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. Subscribe, of course, on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever other fine podcasts are offered. Let's see what else. When you subscribe, please, on iTunes, please give us a 5-star and a favorable review. And of course, the best thing you can do is tell your family, friends, or anybody else who will listen to check out The Alien Invasion. We really appreciate that. So, without further ado, final thoughts. Bradley, you are first.
There will not be a adventure party episode this weekend.
You're going to be in a trivia contest.
Correct. Inessa, myself, and Glenn will all be at this trivia contest on the same team.
Oh, well, good luck. I wish you all the best of luck. And by the time this podcast is out, well, this podcast should be out before it happens. So everybody, good thoughts for Brad, Inessa, and Glenn this weekend. And the podcast he's talking about is Adventure Party, the fairly recently launched podcast that you should also check out. You can find it at galacticnetcasts.com. Okay, Inessa, what's your final thought?
I'm kind of afraid about the trivia thing. I don't really know what to expect. It's the world's largest trivia thing, and it goes from Friday afternoon or evening?
Friday starting at 5 and goes till Sunday at 10.
Oh, this one. Do you guys have a theme for your team?
Well, this year's trivia theme is Guardians of the Trivia.
Guardians of the Contest is Guardians of the Contest theme. I can't remember what ours is right now because we make our own team T-shirts.
Our team T-shirt is done in the style of Baby Groot in a plant, except it has the team name as the bulk of the body for Groot. So there's no head or face. It's just you have the branch and then it says freak and it's got leaves and vines and stuff.
Yeah. Our team name is for reasons everyone already knows, abbreviated to freak.
All right. Again, yes. Good luck, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, and we got a good luck wish from
From Sam Jones from the original Flash. Well, not the original, but the Flash Gordon film from the 70s.
How did he know that you were doing a trivia contest?
We had a friend who lives in Dubai, and he works for a television station there. And he was at a convention where Sam Jones was at, and he asked Sam Jones if he could, you know, get him to say, you know, a good luck message to Team Freak for trivia. Oh. And there was a Flash Gordon. We had a Flash Gordon themed trivia five years ago, something like that, and we did a trivia float based around that. So
all right, sweet. Okay,
so we got Sam Jones to give us the thumbs up, and that was kind of cool.
I think that's guarantee win right there.
I don't know about that.
Well, we hopefully guarantee not at the very bottom.
Our team typically is somewhere between the 20 to 35 to 20 to 40 range out of usually 350 teams. So
that's pretty good.
We're in the top 10%, and that's pretty darn good. So
this year you're going all the way. I can feel it.
That would be cool. Yeah, that would be very cool.
Open.
All right, thanks for joining us, everybody. This edition of Alien Invasion is done. Now get out of here.
Woo-hoo. Night.
I'm sorry.
Hi everyone, Daryl here, and this is Pete. Say hi, Pete.
Hi.
Pete doesn't know you can get all your sci-fi news on one website.
I spend hours and hours looking for the news that satisfies.
Here, have a look at this Galactic Netcast's news feed. I think he likes it. How are you feeling now, Pete?
Oh my god! Oh my god, it's like X-Wing stuff and stuff about Sasquatch and alien existence and the Civil War in the comics and D20s.
You can be as happy as Pete by visiting GalacticNetcasts.com. That site, Pete?
GalacticNetcasts.com.
Read our news feed, subscribe, and listen to our podcasts on the mega feed.
I'm among friends here.
Yes, you are, Pete. You're amongst friends at GalacticNetcasts.com.